This is Liquidity Talks Live, the destination for updates, opinions, and insights from the world of treasury, liquidity, and risk. Join our host, Planic CEO and founder Neville Roberts, and our industry expert guest as we power up the liquidity conversation.
Hello, and welcome to our latest installment of Liquidity Talks live stream and podcast, Season 5. Episode 2. I'm Neville Roberts, CEO and founder of Planix, the market-leading fintech focused on real-time treasury, liquidity, and risk. Now, our topic today is entitled, Is Your T+1 Spend Already Obsolete? Probably a frightening title for many of you out there. Welcome to our audience today. Good morning, afternoon, and evening, wherever you may be. Anyone in the audience can ask questions as we run through the next 30 minutes. And if you could put them on the right-hand side, if you see the comment section, if you type them in there, we can take those questions as we go. And any that are asked at the end, we can also answer. If when you ask a question, let us know who you are. And if you possibly can, your role, so we have some context, that would be great. Now, I'm joined today by our guest speaker, Gary Wright, who is director at ISITC Europe CIC. Now, Gary has been on the podcast previously, so welcome back. Gary, would you like to introduce yourself, tell us who you are and what you do?
Yeah, thanks very much. Third time coming back, and nothing like having a good thing, is there, really? But I'm Gary Wright. I've been in the industry since 1969, as a lot of people know, and they can see me. I don't look like I'm in the fresh flush of youth. But it does mean that I've been through a whole load of changes within the capital markets over that time. And at Azizi, we're a CIC, community interest company. And what we do is try and bring markets together across the industry. So capital markets with financial services, with FX. We're a kind of a knowledge sharing. We're almost like a think tank nowadays, but we do yeah. research as well on the market. And for my sins, I was a founder of Azizi nearly 40 years ago, and somehow or other, I'm still involved with it. But it's all brilliant. Good fun.
Well, welcome. And I'd like to point out that this podcast, it's about our 33rd or something. You have the second highest number of registrations for this podcast, beaten only by yourself on one of your other podcasts. So you're setting some records here, Gary. So welcome back. Now, I don't want to talk football. Obviously, there's lots of jokes like hat tricks and never going to score that with Spurs. But we will briefly touch on it because I'm almost as bad with Liverpool. But any commentary, any 30-second commentary on Spurs' season so far?
Yeah. None. I'm not going to say it. I'm speechless.
Indeed. Well, we'll leave it there. So will I. Let's get into the topic. Look, before we get into the headline from the episode description and the, you know, the budget reality check, how do you avoid wasting billions on patching up legacy platforms when, let's face it, the future is programmable?
I mentioned about the length of time I've been involved in the market, but in this particular instance, this is the most innovation period that we've ever been in. Market changes normally are led by greed or fear. Fear meaning regulation, greed meaning opportunity in business. And it's normally led by market infrastructure, or it's normally led by a technology like the internet and the web, which changes things. And then the success, people follow success. So if you're thinking about when the web started, all those businesses were set up in the web, and there's probably, you can count them on the fingers of one hand, the amount of successful businesses that went from that all the way through to now. So yeah. Innovation it brings lots of challenges, and that's the problem that we're in at the moment. We've got so much innovation on so much different types of technology and so many things that are required. It's very, very difficult. And if I was an ops director today and I was sitting in my office and I was trying to work out what next year's budget we're going to be spent on, to be quite honest, I'd find it very, very difficult to make a case. So you need a business plan, essentially, in this innovation period. You need to have some idea of what your business is going to be, what you want it to be, what the products are going to be, what your clients are, where you're going to make your money, And what do you do to change it? So the technology investments that you do today is not really like supporting a business. It's really about developing your business. Yeah. And so it's really should be business first, and then see what the technology, where that takes you to support that business, not invest in the technology and then try and find the business value for it.
Yeah, and I think just an observation on that, what I've seen is 10 years ago or so, even 5 years ago, our customers used to set their plans towards the end of the calendar year. They released all the budget start of the year. They knew the plans for the year. Now that budget cycle, it tends to drag on into January, February, because they're not quite sure. And it can change throughout the year, which what used to be quite rare. But whether that's because there's changing priorities throughout the year or things are moving so fast. But we're seeing more of that as well.
Well, yeah, for many decades, most banks, most financial institutions generally have followed a development plan which is set by regulation. So if we went back to the early 2000s when MiFID started to emerge, that drove investing in systems depending on the regulation. And then if you get a fault in the market where there's some sort of criminal or activity in the market, then that drives it. So you get this sort of list of high priorities which don't necessarily see the light of day, because as you work to one high priority, you get another high priority coming on. So the development budgets for most firms has been about what are the regulators doing, what's the regulation going to say. This period is not that, because the regulators are not, they don't establish new markets, they will monitor and change compliance towards changes in the market, but they won't lead the market. And in the UK we have the stock exchange, a number of trading venues, in fact. We don't even have one. We don't have a vertical like the US, where you have the New York Stock Exchange and the DTCC and the regulators all closely aligned in a vertical. We have a horizontal structure in the UK, and we do have in the EU as well, where it's by choice. And therefore, the leadership, when you've got new technologies coming on board, leadership is very, very difficult, because who do you follow? If you've got an execution value, any number of exchanges or clearing houses, which one is leading?
Yeah, got it. Okay, Rook, on to the mandatory piece, I guess. So where exactly are we now on T+1 in UK, Europe, dates, deliverables, readiness for 26, 27? You know, where do we all stand?
Right. OK, well, we've got the hard fast date, as everyone will know, in October 2027 in the UK and in the EU and Switzerland. We mustn't forget Switzerland. The great thing is, if there's one big plus out of all of this, is the UK, the EU and the Swiss are all working together on this. So it's almost like Brexit never happened. So this is not political. This is all about the markets operating together to try and achieve a successful end goal. So a strong collaboration with the EU and the UK, lots of knowledge sharing on the various industry boards that are taking this forward. You've got the same names that are appearing on both, so there's consistency in approach. And if you looked at the business plan on both, you would say that both were written by the same people, effectively. It's different markets, but the same people. Now, our problem is ITSE. We always wanted regulation changes first, so that it gets everybody on the same page all at the same time. But the model wasn't like that. They decided they would go to a more flexible model and just leave it up to each firm to make the necessary changes that they need to do. So there's no, it's just almost a competitive type scenario rather than following a regulatory lead. Although the regulators are supporting firms and encouraging as strongly as they can that they invest in the necessary technologies to make this happen. I would say, because of the non-regulatory, it's not sort of got into the audit, it's very difficult to gauge where the market is. And for that reason, We're using this by survey, and I hate surveys, I have to say, because surveys don't necessarily, it depends who's answering the survey. Who are they? Are they representing the corporate, or who are they representing? Do they have the required knowledge to answer a question? And also the size of the survey. So if you're doing a survey, you really do need to have a decent number to be able to get a sensible result. And so I don't like surveys, especially on major industry changes. But that's where we are. We're trying to work out where we are as an industry to make sure that everyone is doing what they should be doing, and hopefully they are. But we don't have any way of knowing that for sure. Our research from Azizi says that on the retail side of the market, the broker dealers, the investment managers, and what have you, are tending to wait to see what their custodians or their settlement agents are doing. So they're waiting for some sort of leadership from that. And for many, they have a very, they see it as job done, you know, that we can, in the UK, we can match in CREST now. And once the match is done, therefore everything is okay. The match is everything. It's not, unfortunately, with this, because there's treasury issues around T+1. There's also real-time processing issues. There's data quality issues. There's liquidity issues in terms of the market being able to maintain efficient settlement levels. So firms that are looking at this as outcome-related, that it's simply about settlement performance on the day, is missing the point. But this is very much about the process in and around that settlement, around the execution of a transaction, and how that is being managed, how whether it's domestic or international. There's probably more issues on the international investing side than there is domestically, but there's still issues nonetheless that they need to get their heads around. And I hope that firms are doing that. I hope they've not parked it and just think, well, there's still time to go for 2027. We don't have to budget until next year. That would be the wrong thing to do. They really do need to budget this year and start now. There's no need. There's no point in waiting. They need to start now.
And from a cost point of view, if you think about Atomic or T+0, it's, you know, it's already here, or it's almost here. Is T+1? Is from a technology and cost point of view, is it a journey to T+1 to T+0? Or is it, you know, an expensive detour to move to T+1? You've got to do all of that work again when it comes to T+0.
Yeah, it's a good question, because it goes to the very beginnings of the Azizi Europe research on T+1, when we were commissioned by the Swift Institute to look at the impacts after America moved to T+1. And essentially, there was no business case. There's some that has been promoted that you save money on the clearing and margining and what have you. But that's not an industry-wide business case. And there hasn't been an industry-wide business case on this. So from a Azizi viewpoint, if we were purely putting this down to saying, well, okay, but how much are we going to save? How much is all the firms going to save? How much are investors going to save? And are the investors going to get a better deal out of this and a better service out of this? That is not clear. And the amount of money that you've got to spend on these systems to do that is not clear on its own. But the caveat is, as a springboard to transformation towards a fully digitalized market, as a springboard to increasing services internationally and in a digital assets world, and to go into potentially a 24/7 investing trading an economic viewpoint, it does make sense, because you can't really talk about these things without having first moved towards T+1, or as what more accurately, what I'll call it, real-time processing, because that's what's required. So the question is if you're investing on T+1 on your legacy systems today, will that investment that you're putting into your T+1 legacy systems today have an ROI in the future as the market moves to digital and into a real-time settlement process? And that is not a clear decision. That is one that each firm needs to sit down and think about their business for the next 5-10 years going forward, whatever their businesses want to be, it's not about continuity of what they're doing now. It's about opportunity of what they could do in a fully digitalized real-time environment.
Got it. And look, when I think of digital, whether it's assets, stable coins, etc., who owns this transformation end to end? How do we break that siloed approach inside banks and across the marketplace? There's so much happening.
Yeah, well, that's the problem. There's so much happening is because the and it's what I go back about the leadership thing. There is no model that is being presented to say, but this is what the market infrastructure, this is what the market would look like once we all arrive at the promised digital land. It's left to individual firms, and those firms are market infrastructure. So the stock exchanges, the clearing houses, the CSDs, the custodians, they've all been working on new technology developments around digital for quite a few years now. A lot of blockchain DLT development going on now, AI being introduced, a lot of issues around data quality, a lot of issues around interoperability, a lot of issues around network. So you've got lots and lots of things. You've got a lot of moving parts here. And which is why if you need to sit down in a quiet room somewhere, if you're an ops director right now,
cold towel over your head,
because the opportunity, you've got all these tools in the toolbox, you've got all the pieces in the jigsaw puzzle, all these sort of things, but you've got to try and work out what it is and how you're going to get there. What's the picture you want to create for yourself? So it's innovation in its purest form for every firm that's involved in their business today. It's not about maintaining what you've got to maintain going forward. It's about developing and innovating your business going forward, and then looking at the technology to say, well, how do I support that new business that I want to go after?
So I'm an ops director. I'm sat in my firm coming back to this year. What are the kind of the non-negotiable operational changes that I must land this year to be T+1 ready?
Well, first of all, I think what I say about real-time processing, it means that your data quality has got to be top-notch. So I would say, first of all, look at your data, where you're getting your data from. The quality of your data would be a very high on the list. And that side-by-side with that would be settlement instructions, which is sort of a data issue as well, is the quality of your settlement instructions, the quality of any agency you're doing, so the communication lines between that, the standardization of that data. So potentially Swift have been banging on about ISO 20022 for many a year, but this is the time where that you would look at ISO 20022, and if you hadn't thought there was a business case before, there could well be a business case now for ISO 20022. Yeah. So look at I come from the capital markets, but and there's a tendency to look at these as vertical markets, but don't look at that as vertical. Look at that as interaction with the payments industry. Look at the FX industry, because this all sort of comes into line. So it's architecting your data flows and your communication. So that would be my starting point. And then very quickly go on into educating people within your operation about what it is, how their jobs change, how that can evolve. So opportunity maybe to streamline, maybe eliminate some jobs, some tasks which you don't need to do anymore, and maybe focus on some which will be better for employees, better for the business.
Got it.
That's a long answer to that question, but I...
That's a lot to do. But if we come back to Treasury, and I'm thinking about FX in particular, now how big is the FX problem and cross-border friction? So especially, with US on T+1, India piloting T+0, and while UK and Europe move towards T+1 in 2027, how big is that FX issue?
Yeah, it's a big issue. It's a really... in the... UK, we are and always have been an international market for the benefit of our time zones, the geography as much as anything else. But the same would apply in the EU as well. The opportunity here is to is to build a market which is genuinely global, linking the American markets with the Far East markets. So not the follow the sun model necessarily, but an attraction to global investors to come to this geography to be able to do that. Now, for that to happen, the FX and the capital markets, the investing part of it, need to be very closely aligned. Because what you don't want to do is lose whatever you're making on the apples in the capital markets, is lose it on the FX pairs in their market. So you need to look at the latency issue between the FX settlement and the equity settlement. In many cases, internationally, that's a real challenge, especially if banks have outsourced to India or other countries. So you've got, you're sending execution transactions out to a 6 hour away, getting it back again and trying to manage both on an outsourced model. Yeah. That's a real challenge, and it may be one that won't last the test of time. So near sourcing may have to come in where you bring these executions of the FX and the other markets closer together, which then goes to this digitalization. So things such as crypto and CBDCs are much easier to operate within a real-time processing environment, much cheaper, less risky, much easier to manage by going down that route. And I suggest that probably in the fullness of time, we might see that as emerge as the way that international markets work.
Understand. So look, moving on, you know, if we agree digital assets, that, you know, they're here right now, or they will be here in force. What's a credible path from, you know, pilots to scale, and how do tokenized assets, how do they fit into the 2027 plan?
Well, already there's been live executions of gilts and bonds on a digital platform between the stock exchanges, the CSE. So, you know, it's not really a proof of concept anymore. I mean, this is live, so you can do this. And the questions are, is how do you scale it to attract more issuers? So if it was gilts, Bank of England coming in and using a new infrastructure, using a digital gilt rather than as they do at the moment, how would you capital raise using a digital asset? They could do that now. It's the tipping point. It's when you get to the tipping point where you get the existing businesses that are currently going through the legacy infrastructure, legacy cost, to when you start utilizing what's already there. Yeah. And then it becomes a race to the top, because there are many different ways operating models that banks and CSDs and stock exchanges are working on. So it depends on who attracts most of that business coming in. And then it's around interoperability. To grow it, you need to have, if you're going down multiple vertical lines of digital assets and digital capital raising and what have you, is that you then want interoperability to go across platforms. So if somebody, a major issuer, was raising capital on through a Citibank digital platform, then somebody in Australia wanted to access that, then they would go through potentially, for argument's sake, Deutsche Bank's digital platform. Then you want Deutsche Bank and Citibank to have interoperability, so you can do that transaction. So it's a series of verticals that we're creating. We need that horizontal interoperability, but alongside that, we do need strong international standard regulation that gives the necessary protection to international investors of all shapes and sizes. So, and what I mean by that is I have this hope, vision, if you like, that what we have is something which is attractive to small retail investors. You know, the man in the street is able to access and to manage their pension or whatever directly, and they can invest in a company at a very small level. So it becomes less like a market that's operating for the rich and the famous, but it becomes more a market for everyone.
Yeah, got it. Okay. We are running out of time, but I did want to touch on everyone's favorite subject these days, which is AI. you know, where, what's your view on where this is in the post-trade stack? You know, quick wins, are there some systematic risks? Give us your view on AI.
Well, is working on an AI service for our members, which is we've engaged with a startup called Gen Bounty, and what they have a platform, which is a platform against the EU AI Act, which is we've done that because it's the only regulation. It's a clear regulation, and we think that that's going to be the bare bones of every regulation in and around AI. And it's important that people understand what AI is and what it isn't. I mentioned earlier about this is a business decision. Well, AI is very much a business issue as much as anything else. So Izitsi is working on two things. One is a market paper. It's based around the FCA guidelines paper, but we've written it. And the intention is, and we're doing this right now, we're getting feedback from firms around what they should be doing around AI and how they should be considering this from a regulatory standpoint. When we get that feedback, we're going to present it to the FCA. So we're actually trying to do a bit of the FCA work for them. The FCA have been given the bum's rush by the government. They've got to do something. They can't sit on the fence. They've got to do something. So we've got in this sort of grey area where we've got regulation, which is not quite there yet, but is coming. We know it's coming. We've got growth of AI infiltrating through firms, normally through individuals or small departments where they're having to manage that. So our approach to this is, first of all, audit the AI infiltration where you've got it, then create a policy, which is where the Izitsi platform comes in, and then governance from that. So it's a bottom-up approach. And from there, firms should be able to work out how they use AI, how they allow it to come in, and what they use it for. At the moment, AI is, anyone who uses ChatGPT will know that it's it makes a lot of errors. AI makes a lot of errors. So you need a human at the moment as interaction to check and try and iron those errors out. I believe that there will always be a human somewhere in the loop. And again, innovation, we don't want to stop innovation, that's it, but we need to control it. We need managed, controlled development of AI, and that's what Izitsi is trying to do at the moment.
Got it. So look, we could talk forever on this subject, but a standard right with our guests, one final takeaway. So if you could leave viewers with one thing to do in 2026, what would it be and why?
Sit down and work out what you want your business to be, because you're not going to get there simply by investing in technologies and think that's going to take you. You need to know what your business is going to be. This is all about business. It's not about technology, really. Technology is the enabler, but it's business. That's what we're in. That's where you're going to make your money. Who's going to be your clients?
So it's think about that first. And should you lead or should you follow? What's the best?
I always believe in leading.
What you should do?
I always believe in leading. In business, lead, don't follow. In this highly innovation period, there's no benefit in allowing the competition to steam by you. You know, you're in a race. You're going to be up against existing players that are competing with you, but potentially a whole load of new ones as well.
Perfect. No prizes for second best, but let's not apply that to football. Thank you very much. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. So thanks, Gary, for joining us today and sharing your views. It's been absolutely excellent. If anyone has any questions after the event, then please ask them and we will answer them for you later. That concludes our latest Liquidity Talks live stream and podcast. We'll be putting the podcast on LinkedIn, Spotify, Apple Music and other media outlets and streaming services very soon. Thank you very much for joining us today. Look out for our next podcast next month. My name is Neville Roberts. Thank you for tuning in and goodbye.
Thanks, Neville.
You've been listening to Liquidity Talks. Don't forget to subscribe to stay updated on the latest developments and industry opinion from the world of treasury, liquidity, and risk.